Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
All right, Jake, we now have another match for WrestleMania, or do we? Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. But no, we have a double cross, I guess. Sami and KO attack Shane McMahon after making that announcement. Are we to believe that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn were in on this all along and decided not to win the WWE Championship at Fastlane in order to lure everybody into a false sense of security, primarily Shane, so they could attack him? Or did something happen to bring them together since Fastlane? Can you, Jake, help clear that up for me right now?
Well, I mean, they both had backstage interviews throughout the show, and maybe it wasn't perfectly executed, per se. But Sammy's interview, he basically blamed both Kevin and Shane for costing him the WWE Championship. And then later on in the show, Kevin had a backstage interview where he couldn't believe that Sami felt that way, and then said he would personally go and straighten him out and show him who the real enemy was, basically. And I think that's what led us to the final segment. I mean, I can't believe that this was all some master plan that they had, because if they had a master plan, I would assume it would involve one of them capturing the WWE Championship.
And then the other can pretend to be really upset, but at least one of them is champion as they continue the ruse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, last week they kind of made Sami look like a fool for pulling off his turn a little early, and then I don't know. I mean, it seems like it's just they've kind of worked their way into this position now, and they felt like they had to have them at least come together to make this triple threat feel like it has any kind of juice whatsoever. And I assume that's where they're going here.
Are we supposed to be okay if they don't come up with a better explanation other than, haha, we fooled you? Like, I mean, because I find that completely unacceptable if that's what they're going to try to tell us, that we're supposed to ignore that they gave up the chance to win the title on Sunday to fool everybody so they could double-team Shane McMahon, which they could do, like you said, if one of them is a champion, or they could do it in many other circumstances, and they didn't even get what they wanted. You know, it's like that. I just don't get it right now. I mean, I'm hopefully this will all fall into place and they'll come up with a story that they, made up after Sunday and then came up with this ploy to lure Shane once Shane said he had a big announcement. I mean, I'm hoping that's what happens, because I don't really know if there's another acceptable option.
Yeah, I have to believe they're going to be covering a lot of ground with that next week. Daniel Bryan is back. Shane's going to be off the show. I mean, at least he announced that he was taking an indefinite leave of absence, but that was before the attack. But I would assume that the injury, he would have to be out for several weeks to make it appear as legitimate as it looked. So, at the end of the day, I'm assuming the next couple of weeks of SmackDown television, it probably won't be the big master plan reveal, but I'm assuming it'll be the story of how they got back on the same page and recognized that Shane McMahon was the real enemy.
Yeah, yep. What do you make of Shane McMahon announcing that he is taking an indefinite leave? To me, I'm thinking, well, he's taking a leave because he's going to then put himself in a match. That he's saying, I can't, as a commissioner of SmackDown, also be a wrestler, which would have been sort of funny and ironic. But, in some way, that was what was happening. But I'm not quite sure, unless he's just pulling himself from TV other than the WrestleMania match and trying to do so voluntarily.
Yeah, and part of this makes me wonder if they were still kind of hedging their bets as to whether or not Daniel Bryan was going to get cleared up until recently, or at least not 2 months ago or something, because it looked like they had two simultaneous stories running together there. I mean, you and I had previously talked about how they weren't doing a very graceful job of keeping them both in the air and keeping it interesting.
Yeah.
And so, it seems like they figured out where they're going, and now they're just kind of writing their way towards it, and it's not coming together as nicely as it should, because they had to close a lot of loose ends, and it made a lot of people look kind of silly along the way, and Shane's antagonism of Daniel Bryan now seems kind of out of place now that he's just suddenly acquiesce to the idea that he hasn't been acting as professional as he should have on television. And so I guess we'll see how it plays out when Brian is back on TV with Owens and Zayn next week and how that relationship goes. But it seems like they were perhaps just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop and which story they were going with. And now that they have a direction, maybe they'll try to sort it all out.
Are you anticipating Daniel Bryan is cleared or will be? I was guessing on Sunday night that on the VIP roundtable after the pay-per-view that it would end up being Kevin versus Sammy versus Shane with Daniel Bryan as a special referee. If Daniel Bryan's not cleared, but that Kevin Owens and Sammy would remain enemies, you know, that the question would be, will they, you know, get on the same page by the time WrestleMania comes around or not? Does that seem like a possibility that Daniel Bryan will say, Shane, you need to solve this in the ring, but I want to be special referee to make sure things go smooth?
It's certainly plausible. I mean, I can't imagine they won't have anything to do with Bryan at WrestleMania. Yeah. If it's not, you know, in the ring in a wrestling role, you know, he's too important to the story that they've been telling to just sort of write him out 3 or 4 weeks before WrestleMania. So I'm sure he'll be involved in some way. Special guest referee probably makes a lot of sense. I'm assuming, you know, just based on all the rumor and innuendo that's been flying around online that he's not cleared, but right. Maybe there's still some hope. But I think he could slot in there and still provide a lot of entertainment, because I think one of, you know, his strongest qualities is how much he's matured as an actor. You know, like he does do facial expressions well, he does body language well, and those are things that can really come across in the referee role.
Absolutely. Well, let's set the table here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Tuesday, March 13th, 2018. We're live immediately after SmackDown aired on USA Network. And my co-host today is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. You can read his SmackDown reports live every Tuesday night on ProWrestling.net. Jake, talk about how people can listen to you otherwise, other than this show every once in a while, on a podcast that you're part of.
Well, Jason Pyle and I co-host .NET Weekly every week for our members at ProWrestling.net, and Will Pruitt and I get together with what we call the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, typically weekly if scheduling permits, and then I also review pay-per-views after major WWE shows with Jason on Sunday nights, once or twice a month, depending on the schedule, so you can find me there.
Excellent. Well, let's go ahead and start taking some phone calls. We've got a lot more on tonight's episode to talk about. AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura hype and Charlotte and Asuka hype. Those two things stood out. We also had Big E and Jimmy Uso teaming together against the Bludgeon Brothers and Randy Orton celebrating his U.S. title victory and then watching Bobby Roode lose to Jinder Mahal thanks to some interference or distraction from Sameel Singh. And those are kind of the high points. So we'll see what callers have to say about this. We got a number of people on hold. If you're interested in getting in on the waiting list to be a caller on the caller portion of today's show, just call 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email the show if you're listening and can't get through, or we don't get to you, or you just don't want to call. The email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. I'll be by later this week with the Thursday flagship on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast on Podcast One with Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks as my guest co-host on the flagship this week. A lot to talk about, and I hope you'll join us there. If you're not subscribing to both feeds, we have this feed, the red feed, and then we also have the blue feed. That's hosted by Podcast One. Both should pop up when you search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts. Just subscribe to the red brand to get our post shows, the post Raw and post SmackDown episodes early in the week, and then subscribe to the blue logo, our blue brand from Podcast One, and that'll get you the Thursday flagship and Interview Friday. All right, let's go to our first call of the show and begin with error code 804. 804, thanks for holding and calling. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys, it's Mark from Richmond.
Hey, Mark, what's on your mind tonight? Thanks for calling.
Hey, I just finished watching the show. I guess what y'all were talking about with Shane and Sammy and KO, do you think maybe it might be a triple threat now and then at WrestleMania with possibly Daniel Bryan refereeing?
Yeah. I'm not sure if you just called in, but I just mentioned that about 2 minutes ago that I was kind of speculating that would probably be the way things would go. That's where I was predicting things would go as of Sunday night after Fastlane. But now I actually think, Mark, the angle tonight with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn attacking Shane moves it into it makes it seem less logical. You know, why would Daniel Bryan put Shane in the ring against both KO and Sami? Because that's basically a 2-on-1 match, unless KO and Sami. I mean, I just don't know how they get there unless the goal is make Daniel Bryan seem like a heel who made an unreasonable decision by putting Shane in a bad spot because Shane relinquished, without explanation, by the way, his duties as commissioner.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, this angle's been so hot and cold for, so long now. I really don't even know what they're going to do anymore, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I have a little less faith right now than I did an hour ago that this would all, you know, make sense. but you know, until it's done, until they've told the full story, maybe they've got a way to make it make sense.
And I just wanted to say one more thing. I was thinking about a Halloween costume. I know we're a little ways away from that, but I'm thinking of this year going as the WrestleMania sign with a hand pointing to me. I don't know if anyone will get it.
Yes, I could see that. I could see that working. Mark, anything else for us?
It's every 5 seconds we see it.
So. Oh, God, yeah, yeah. And then actually just be the WrestleMania sign, and then people can just walk around pointing at you, and then people who aren't wrestling fans won't get it.
There you go.
That'll work. All right, cool. Mark, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, let's go to our next call and go to air code 419. 419, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, it's Denny from Toledo.
Oh, hey, Denny. How you doing?
I'm good, good. Thanks for taking my call. First, I want to say they were hyping the Shane McMahon announcement so much, I thought they almost weren't going to deliver it like we didn't get Lesnar and Rousey in the eight-man tag last night.
I know. I know. It's
that's why I'm still a little upset about it.
It deserves scorn and attention.
Yeah, but as far as SmackDown goes, I want to say, like, I love what they've been doing with Big E and letting him get more serious on the mic. Like, I still enjoy New Day, and I still think that they're really funny, like, when they do their act. But when Big E gets serious, I really see a lot of potential in him, and I really think that he could be he has main event potential, you know, because he does a lot of things well. He's good in the ring. He can be funny when he needs to be, but you know, when he turns it up and can be serious, it really strikes a chord with me. Do you guys think that if they continue, you know, letting Big E kind of branch out, if it's going to result in like a singles push?
I liked what I saw tonight too with Big E. I really like serious, straightforward, non-frivolous, non-goofball Big E. And he's got a goofball side to him. It comes naturally. But I liked what we saw tonight, both from him and Jimmy on the microphone. Jake, did that strike you too?
Yeah, definitely. I've been saying it for a while now that he could be, you know, the breakout single star of New Day if and when, you know, the time comes that they pull the trigger and separate them. But I just think they, you know, they found so much success and it's such a hit at, you know, arena shows and, you know, at pretty much every TV they get a big reaction. So I don't know if the time is right for them to split them up right now. But for sure, you know, he definitely was missing the charisma piece of the puzzle. Like, they weren't quite sure how to use him before the New Day came together and some of that natural personality came out. But now I think he's, you know, he's shown that he's basically the total package. Like, you know, as long as he stops doing that silly spot where he damn near falls on his neck every time he jumps out of the ring for that spear through the ropes, I think he'll be fine.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Anything else, Denny?
As far as that goes, I honestly think that they could do, like, I don't even think they have to split him up, like, you know, then let him go after the United States title. I think they can, you know, just kind of keep them together as kind of like a stable instead of like a tag team. So, but that's the only thing. That's all I had for you guys. I appreciate you guys taking my call.
Sure thing. Thanks, Danny. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go next to 408. 408, you're up next. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, it's Antonio from Oakland.
Hey, Antonio. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
So I want to talk about the ending segment there. I heard you guys' opinion on it. For me, personally, I don't actually see a huge problem with it. The way I look at it, it just looks like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens have a bigger issue with Shane being screwed over by Shane at the match last night, being pulled out of the ring and stopping the referee. I feel like they were more upset with Shane than with each other. That's why they decided to kick his ass when they see the opportunity. So I don't think there need to be necessarily an explanation what happened between Sunday and now. I said last night. It was actually Sunday night. Between Sunday and now, you know, if they made up or anything, I don't really think that needs to be a huge explanation. All they have to say is just that I'm more mad at Shane than with each other.
I'm glad you brought up that angle. I mean, Jake, can they be as mad at each other as they have been? And can we think about what they said in their promos and then imagine that they would unite just long enough to beat up Shane, who they dislike more, and they would actually cooperate and listen to each other and kind of take orders from each other because they hate Shane so much, but actually still be at each other's throats too, just at a later time? Like, is it logical to kind of think that that could be where this goes? And is there a believable way to tell that story based on what we've seen so far?
I think you have to count on it. I mean,
yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
The idea that, that they would completely abandon their animosity towards each other is sort of unrealistic. But I think the way that they conducted those backstage interviews tonight, you know, led me down the path of, okay, well, maybe they can agree to hate Shane, temporarily, you know, but it wouldn't be something that would be permanent. I mean, they were both sort of manically going back and forth between blaming each other and blaming Shane for their problems. And I think that's how they get to, you know, a triple threat that makes sense, because you're going to have three people in the match who don't particularly like each other at all. And that kind of works, I guess. I still don't know, you know, how that match goes with, you know, with Shane in the ring. You know, he even tonight when he was just throwing punches, it's like he's just like aggressively combing the other guy's hair. It always looks so damn terrible. Like I guess if he's just out there to take abuse, I'm kind of for it. But I mean, it's not like it's AJ Styles. You know, you're not going to have, you know, unless the match is completely dominated by Owens and Zayn, I'm just imagining just terrible spots at WrestleMania.
Well, his face got so red. I mean, I was worried for him for a few seconds during that beatdown. It's just like he gets so tight and intense in these feuds. And I thought Sammy stiffed him pretty hard, which is probably how Shane wants it. I mean, aspects of the fight look more real than anything else. And then Shane throws punches and it just breaks all suspension of disbelief. Did you have a problem with the way Shane sold the kind of the big moves at the end, especially the powerbomb onto the stack of ladders backstage and the weird noises he was making? Did that work for you, Jake?
I mean, it didn't bother me really. It stuck out to me like, oh, that's, you know, it sounds like he got the wind knocked out of him, and maybe that's what they were going for. Could you do kind of wheeze and gurgle like that when you get the wind knocked out of you? But I don't know what, if that was something he was doing like involuntarily, like he actually did get the wind knocked out of him, or if that was just him, you know, doing the whole, I'm going to try to act for once and making strange noises. But it didn't bother me, but it wasn't like something that stood out to me like, okay, they should go back to this because it really worked.
Yeah. Antonio, anything else for us?
Yeah, I'm not entirely looking forward to a triple threat. I'm still holding out hope that it might be a tag match with Daniel Bryan possibly being cleared. What's your opinion on how likely that would happen? And also, last thing, I think it might be interesting if it goes the tag team route, put Finn's in it with Shane. Not talking about how good the match would be, but it would be an interesting angle. What do you guys think?
Finn Balor, you said?
No, Vince McMahon.
Oh, Vince and Finn. Okay, Finn, Vince. Okay, yeah, I lost that.
Vince and Shane versus Shane and Owen.
Jake, they cannot put 70-plus-year-old Vince McMahon in the ring. I mean, I know Kevin Owens has an issue with them, and I know Shane and Vince were shown together on Raw, and maybe that would help explain it. There's all kinds of theories about why they did that. Last night on Raw, I don't see them putting Vince in the ring. I think that's just, there's two, for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from a story perspective, would it be, you know, would fans get excited about it? Absolutely. But I think just from a corporate standpoint, the look of it when they're in the middle of a television deal and all that would be really bizarre. So it's bad enough that Triple H and Stephanie and Shane are all going to be all over WrestleMania. But I think Vince is sort of a special case where his age and how much he means to the company, you know, would be difficult to put him in that position.
Yeah. Antonio, thanks for the call. Any closing words?
No, that's it. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you're on hold and want to be on the show, you have to push 1 on your keypad. I'm not supposed to say touch tone phone anymore, Jake, because that's a carryover from like the 90s. People say it sounds dated. So I'm saying on your keypad or your touchpad. All right, let's go next to area code 615. 615, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Kenny from Tennessee.
Hey, Kenny, good to hear from you again. What's on your mind?
Hey, before I get started, I want to give a shout out to Jake and him saying rumor and innuendo. Me being a Bruce Pritchard fan and a fan of his podcast, I thought that was awesome.
I wasn't, it wasn't an intentional reference, but I'll take it.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to talk about the tag team situation on SmackDown tonight. It's kind of interesting, kind of where you're going. You mentioned about, dealing with one half of the Usos and Big E in the match against the Bludgeon Brothers, and just how the way the Bludgeon Brothers are just continuing to dominate and just kind of gelling as a solid tag team on the SmackDown side. But the funny thing I've noticed in watching SmackDown lately is I haven't seen a lot of Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable, and I've been kind of in and out of watching the show the last few weeks, but I want to get your question on what's the status on both of them. Are they still going to be paired together as a team? Or are there any issues as far as injuries? I'm just was kind of curious because I haven't seen them on TV lately.
Sure. Jake?
I don't think that there's any injury or anything. I just don't think they really fit into any of the stories that they're trying to tell right now at WrestleMania. I don't know if the long-term plan is to keep them together or not. It wasn't that they're bad. I really enjoy Gable's work, and I think Benjamin, was a nice fit, as a replacement for Jason Jordan. But he kind of, feels like a discount Jason Jordan in that role. And I just don't know if that's something that they want to continue to push, given how when they put them on the microphone, it just never really clicked. So that would be my just estimation based on what I've seen. But I haven't heard anything. I don't know of any injuries or anything like that.
I mean, they worked the dark match with Mojo Rawley against Breezango and Ty Dillinger on Sunday, and I don't think there was an injury there. So, Kenny, they're active, but it's like Mojo Rawley or Ty Dillinger or Mike Kanellis or who am I missing? The missing in action, one-third of the roster just they don't utilize regularly on SmackDown. And I don't know if it's exact math there, but there's a number of people that on a roster that feels kind of thin, they just for whatever reason don't feature some of the guys very often. But I Shelton and Chad, I haven't kept stats on it, but it doesn't seem like they've been gone that much. I mean, I think they've been around enough where I feel like they're more in the mix than even Ty Dillinger over the past couple of months. Kenny, anything else?
That's kind of interesting. It's kind of funny how, with SmackDown being 2 hours, and the fact that, they don't really use the roster or try to mix them up now and then, whereas Raw, I feel like they're kind of would be overexposed, but I just kind of find that ironic. By the way, it's funny when Rusev was not only on the opening match of the show tonight, but he was also on the mixed match challenge. And, he keeps getting a huge ovation for the most part every time he comes out. But it seems like he's getting like the short end of the stick. And now it seems like it's kind of real interesting where he's going to be at in terms of as we're heading to WrestleMania. And considering that Braun Strowman has won that tag team battle royal to end Raw, do you think it's just like maybe for like a one-time deal or like would you think it'd be possible to have like, let's say a Braun Rusev match, paired him as a tag team, Rusev goes to Raw and, if nothing else, use him on Raw. I think he would be a great asset on Raw and in that sense of just, cause I feel like he's kind of right now being underutilized on SmackDown Live being as the heel. And I think if he goes to Raw, whether it be on WrestleMania or on the SmackDown or Superstar Shakeup, I think it would really kind of help, and nothing else can help him get to that next level in terms of popularity if he's paired with Braun. But that's just sort of me doing a little fancy booking, and that's really all I have. I'll let you guys kind of analyze that and see if you can maybe poke holes on it, and you have a good rest of the night.
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. What'd you think of the use set tonight, Jake, of Rusev opposite of AJ and the wisdom of what they're doing with Rusev. They're onto something, or I shouldn't say they're onto something, but Rusev is unexpectedly popular in a way that doesn't happen all that often. And it seems like they're just not, they're going to, it's like Roman Reigns is a lead babyface and Rusev, they're going to push as a heel, even if fans love Rusev Day and Rusev.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like he managed to find that level of success in a way that doesn't fit into their plans at all. And so they're trying to use it as best they can by putting him in matches with high profile opponents, and he gets reactions and he has good matches. But I just, he could be another one of the guys like a Big E who, could see, dividends paid after the next superstar shakeup or draft or whatever you want to call it, because he definitely needs able to be reset a little bit for him so they can shift the roster around after WrestleMania and start building new feuds so that he can be positioned as what he should be, which is the babyface right now.
And what do you a Rusev Braun team? Was that what Kenny was suggesting?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I'm against the idea necessarily. I think they have plans for Braun that I think tacking on Rusev to that would, I think it would end up being less than the sum of its parts. Like it would, they're both really over and they're both super successful, but it's for really different reasons. And I'm not sure that they would mix well together.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Rusev staying on SmackDown unless they move Braun to SmackDown in order to be like the lead babyface on SmackDown. And they move AJ. Well, but then if they move AJ and Rusev to Raw, then, even that's still out of balance, unless they turn Reigns heel. I mean, we can reshuffle everything to try to even things out. Rusev just might end up being the odd man out. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, fans have an affection for him. And I think almost they're doing it because it's genuine, not just to be rebellious. But I also think there's a little bit of, hey, Vince, listen to us. Shane, you said duly noted, and now you're not doing anything with him. It's just, so I hope they haven't been real nimble in terms of finding a way to take advantage of that. And I know he's a good hand against AJ, and Aiden English is, a good agitator at ringside, but fans like Rusev. And I don't think that's the best use of AJ when you're trying to build up his popularity going into WrestleMania. Every babyface who faces Rusev is at a disadvantage they don't deserve, which is a bunch of people in that crowd are not reacting the way that you want them to react to you as a lead babyface because Rusev is so popular.
It's an issue, definitely. Yeah. No, I guess I don't have a lot more to add other than to say that. I don't know who else they would put in there. I don't think they should send out some of the missing cast members of SmackDown to have matches with AJ or Nakamura either. I guess I think that's kind of what they're doing, what would be doing as an alternative, because everybody else is kind of on their way to WrestleMania at this point.
Let's go to 718 next. Thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, this is Dean from New York City. Hi, Wade. Hi, good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for calling. What have you got for Jake and me?
Well, the SmackDown Women's Championship match at WrestleMania, seeing the way that they had the women's match build, I mean, it just, a lot of people said it was out of nowhere, but considering how they've been building on Raw for Nia and Alexa and Asuka, always seemed like she was the odd woman out. Are we going to see some kind of swerve as far as the SmackDown Women's title match goes to extend the Charlotte-Asuka feud where we try to get a cash-in with Carmella, because they seem to be building her up, and Carmella does what Seth tried to do when both of them are down, and then Asuka ends up beating Carmella, and then Charlotte will chase Asuka until we get to a rematch at maybe SummerSlam down the line. What do you think the odds are of that happening?
Yeah, Jake, a certain Jason Powell floated that on Twitter earlier today, I believe.
Yeah, Jason and I spoke about it a little bit after the pay-per-view on Sunday, where we were talking about if they wanted to find a way to keep the title on Charlotte and potentially avoid breaking the streak of Asuka by taking a clean loss in a singles match, that they could potentially have Carmella try to cash in and have Charlotte beat her. I mean, as we saw tonight on SmackDown, Charlotte did the majority of the talking, and I, you know, there's always that question in the back of my mind, like, would they put the championship on Asuka for a long period of time, knowing that she still has fairly significant limitations when it comes to promos? You know, they have to work around some of those limitations in the same way that they do for Nakamura, and to various levels of success, you know, depending on who they're working with. And so I guess we'll have to, that remains to be seen. I think both options are on the table. If they want to avoid, you know, having either Charlotte or Asuka take a loss, they could certainly insert Carmella there and accomplish that goal. But I think it'll be seen as a cop-out.
How would you produce Asuka differently than WWE is at this point? I mean, she's so cornball and awkward that I wanted to enter the endearing territory, but I'm not sure that I'm there yet. I think I'm maybe more irritated by her awkward inflection and awkward pausing and awkward phrasing. And I feel like she's being produced by Jimmy Hart. You know, like, yeah, I'm not going to imitate Jimmy Hart because it'd be embarrassing. But, you know, come on, Asuka, just turn it up, make it, just go over the top with it, more, give me more. And she's just like, everything she says is not really matching natural inflection, but I'm just going to make it dramatic. And it's, I feel
prime,
like it's
prime
too
example
much.
Is tonight when she said thank you to Charlotte. It was like she screamed it like a toddler from across, you know, in yeah. response to it was off-putting in a way. And I guess I don't know if they're doing that just like, okay, this is Asuka. She's always at 11. That's her intensity level all the time, no matter yeah. what she's doing. And I guess you could try to make that work, but they certainly haven't been producing her well. I don't know why they just don't have her speak Japanese and do subtitles. My God, they do how many words on the screen now anyway?
Did we have that tonight? Were there any words on screen?
I didn't see much of it, but
I didn't see. Did you see any of it? That's what I'm wondering.
I didn't.
Yeah,
after the piano fiasco yesterday.
Oh God! And then we had the one selfie promo, which, by the way, is fine. I'm fine with in the right circumstance. And it was Carmella this time. And I thought that worked. You know, Carmella seems like somebody who would be doing selfie promos. You know, like, get away, cameraman. I will do a promo when I want it. I will submit it by Dropbox later. I don't know. But this was a show with really good, just standard interviewer wrestler promo dynamic. Renee interviewing Big E, Renee interviewing Sammy, Renee interviewing Kevin Owens. Like, they shined in that circumstance. They have Renee, who's so good at that job, setting up the interview. I'm trying to think if Dasha did one of those. But nevertheless,
Dasha did the backstage interview with Sami Zayn, I believe it was.
Yeah. And Dasha's good too. Charlie, Dasha, and Renee are all good at doing those interviews, and it is an art. I mean, a lot of people in that job screw that up. They do a good job with it. To me, that was just like this. This is Exhibit A. You don't need to do the selfie promos because this works, and there's no reason to change it just to try to look like you're hip and cool.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. They could probably do a lot more of that with Asuka and Nakamura as well, especially if they're able to pre-tape some of it. You know, they'd get a lot more mileage out of those if they were produced a little bit better and edited well, and they might even need to cut together some things. I don't know, but they could both do with some of those highly produced backstage promos, because it's hard to really get a feel for what their motivation is, and I think it keeps them from connecting with the audience.
I'd like to see sit down. This is having both Asuka and Nakamura in the two singles top titles on SmackDown going into WrestleMania is a challenge, and it's sort of an excuse in a way to give KO, Sammy, Shane, and Brian more mic time. We'll probably get more mic time from Randy Jinder and Orton as a result too, but I would like to see some sit down promos from both Nakamura and Asuka. I think that's a circumstance where Renee doing that style of an interview could work. By the way, Charlotte I thought was really good tonight in her role with Asuka. I thought she carried herself with that gravitas of a supremely confident champion who wants the best challengers. And I like the way that she said she was hoping Asuka would choose her. She had a feeling she would. And that WrestleMania will be a bigger deal because of it. I liked the tone she struck, the words she used, the body language she had, and it worked for me. And I mean, it's having two baby faces against each other besides one of in each match somebody with English as a second or third or fourth language in their cases. There's some challenges, but face-to-face and the only one having strong English, although with Kevin Owens, English is a second language, and he's phenomenal, so that's not an excuse, or the phrase itself doesn't cover the entire aspect of it. But do you agree with me on Charlotte's promo tonight? And by the way, I'll throw in there, I thought AJ was really, really good too, maybe as good as Charlotte was. I thought both AJ and Charlotte did some of their best mic work I've seen in a while tonight. But again, very straightforward, bells and whistles cut out. It didn't feel overly scripted or overly corporate speak, and I thought they had a really good presence as champions. I thought they represented well.
Yeah, I mean, they were probably more similar than they were different in the content of their promos. They both talked about how, you know, they felt like they were unequaled as champions, and how they enjoyed challenges, you know, even though the odds aren't always in their favor in AJ's case, and how they, you know, they were looking forward to taking on the best, and they wanted to prove themselves. And I think that's what you want out of babyface champions. You know, you want them to be willing to defend their championship, and, you know, they were confident, and you don't want them to come across as cocky. And I don't think either of them did, even though that's been an issue for Charlotte in the past. So, yeah, I think they were both successful. I guess it's going to depend on, you know, in the subsequent weeks now, are they able to continue, you know, ratcheting up the pressure on all the competitors and having them come across as, you know, equally having equal levels of motivation and desire? Because I think that's going to be the problem for getting into those matches from a casual fan's perspective, especially with the language barrier. Because, you know, we know Asuka's basically undefeated in WWE, and we know Nakamura has this history in Japan, but it's difficult to get a feel for them on an emotional level because they have them playing cartoon characters almost.
Very well put. I mean, there's so much. I don't think the average mainstream WWE fan who goes to a house show every now and then, watches TV most weeks, I don't think that they see AJ and Nakamura as a dream match, because Nakamura has been more ordinary than extraordinary in his run so far. He's good, and it wouldn't shock me if some people don't love him, but he hasn't just taken SmackDown by storm. He hasn't been framed from even Steven matches and feuds with Ziggler and Jinder. And I mean, it's just like he hasn't come across as like this really something special, a defining wrestler of his generation. So I feel like just AJ saying it's a dream match isn't enough. They have to show us why it's a dream match and not just tell us. And, you know, some press clippings and a little mini documentary on SmackDown and a look at Shinsuke as a human being and not a cartoon character would be good.
Yeah, most definitely. And they have several weeks to do it. So, you know, it's not like this is impossible. It's just one of those things that they have to really spend some time crafting a persona for both of them that they just have fallen short of thus far.
Absolutely. All right, Dean, do you have anything else for us? Okay, he just dropped off. I think he had some noise in the background. All right, 847, you're up next. 847, please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Dan from Chicago. What's going on, guys?
Dan from where?
Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. Gotcha. I don't know. I can't. I thought you said Shyotes, and I'm like, where's that? Wyoming?
Sorry, I got a cold, too.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, get well soon, and take your Zycam. All right. What do you got for us?
a few things. There's one title that Randy Orton has not captured, and that is the WWE Universal Championship. Does that count?
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it, Jake? When they talk about the champion.
My wife actually brought that up.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think if you hold the IC, what is it, the IC US and two of the world titles? Or is it one of the tag team titles and one of the world titles? Like, what counts as the four championships? Do you know, Jake?
I don't know. You kind of have to, like, pick your own Grand Slam at this point. They've had so many of them come in and out of service at times. I guess the Universal Championship would be one that the majority of the—I mean, there's only been what, two or three of them, so I don't know. Yeah. Can you include it in the Grand Slam at this point?
Yeah, I don't think that'd be fair to do. I think if you, I'm not sure if they're counting the tag team titles or the fact that Randy held two versions of the world title, because there was the SmackDown World Title and the Raw WWE title for years. So I don't know. I just know that I wish that there had if. I wish there was one WWE title. I wish they were still WWF, by the way, not WWE. And I wish it was the same belt that Bret Hart held back in the day, and that there was one championship, and there was a lineage, and we could all remember it and memorize it. And then you would have an IC and a US belt that mattered, and it would be simpler. If you're going to have two belts, I wish we had the same two belts consistently, not a merge and a split and a new one being created. It does mess up the lineage. And it's, I mean, it's, you know, in the end, does it affect enjoying Raw on a Monday night or a SmackDown on a Tuesday night? No. But it would be cleaner and nicer, and I'm a, you know, OCD enough that I wish that we had, you know, one or two titles with a solid lineage, and the Grand Slam definition meant one thing to everybody, and it doesn't. But I don't, right. I don't have a clear answer for you.
Okay. Yeah. And you kind of stole my thunder about the selfie promo. There was, like, I think one with Carmella, you said, and yep. I really enjoyed SmackDown without it. It was a fun show tonight. And the other two things I wanted to talk about is the way they portray Asuka and Shinsuke Nakamura with the language barrier. I think they make them look like fools. Like, I just don't like, okay, we get that they have trouble talking, but it's almost like they make Shinsuke look like he can't talk at all, and that's not true, I'm sure.
Oh, I know.
I don't like the way they portray them.
I think they knock 30 IQ points off both of them, the way that they have them talk, yeah. give or take a dozen or so. Yeah, it's not great. I mean, I think there's got to be a better way to go about it. And I mean, I think they did a better job in NXT than they're on the main roster. All right, Dan.
Finish
up.
Oh, sorry. Really quick. I think it'd be funny if they had an interpreter, and if, let's say, one of the interpreters was acting stupid or said something that one of them didn't really say. And AJ can, like, knock one of them out, or Charlotte can knock one of them out. They have a funny storyline with an interpreter or something. You know what I mean?
You can email that to WWE, see if they use it.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Dan. Get well. All right, we got our outside correspondent holding or standing by for our call. So after this break, we'll come back and talk to them. Thanks, everybody, for being on hold. Sorry I didn't get to all the calls again. Our word is spreading that we're on live after we're on SmackDown, and more of you are calling, which is great. But it does mean not all of you each week are going to get through. After this break, we will be on with our live on-site correspondent. All right, we are now joined by our on-site correspondent, Jack London, who is a longtime Torch and ProWrestling.net reader. Jack, thanks for taking time to talk to us after the show tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so first of all, tell us what the crowd is like in Indianapolis. How full was the building? Do you have an estimate?
Oh, it was full. It was full. I actually bought my tickets today, and there were not a lot of tickets left. So, yeah, it was a full house.
That's good news.
Hello?
Yeah, what is the...
Yeah, yeah.
What have you been in that building before for other Raw and SmackDown events? Is this typical for Indianapolis?
Yeah, I think we usually get a pretty good crowd. I would say for a SmackDown event, this is probably more than usual. But yeah, we usually get a pretty good crowd here. They come twice a year, so you know, people kind of know when they're coming.
Did they advertise any matches in particular to help sell tickets?
Yes, they did. They advertised AJ Styles versus Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. And they just announced not too long ago that the match that they're going to go with now is going to be Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura versus Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler.
There's two people I forgot to mention weren't on the show that sometimes aren't. Corbin especially, but Ziggler sometimes too. In the last segment. Yeah, there's so much talent on SmackDown that they don't feature on a weekly basis, which is fine as long as the shows are good otherwise. How did the crowd react to the announcement that they weren't getting AJ, Sammy, and... What, you said AJ, Sammy, and KO? Kevin Owens?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it seems like a suitable substitution. I wouldn't think the crowd would riot.
Right, especially with, you know, the changes that happened as far as last night. So I think we kind of expected it. So nobody rioted. Nobody was too upset.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. And did you stay around for that or just 205 Live?
I'm thinking about it. I'm kind of in the lobby right now. I haven't really invested much time in 205 Live, but it seems like it's pretty good, so I may start checking it out. But I'm trying to figure it out. I might stay for it. But I wanted to go ahead and get this call out the way so I wasn't trying to navigate the phone call while I'm walking down the street.
Excellent. Jake, what do you have as a question for Jack about his experience tonight?
I'm curious what the reaction in the building was to the main event segment and the beatdown that kind of closed the show. Did it quiet the crowd or were they pretty loud for it? I couldn't quite get much of a tell on how it went after they started dragging Shane backstage.
I guess everybody was pretty loud. Like when he made the announcement that it would be Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens at WrestleMania, everybody was kind of deflated. Like, I guess we were all expecting a triple threat. And then it, you know, out of nowhere, the beatdown started. So people got invested in the beatdown. And, you know, when it was all over, everybody was just like, oh, okay. And, you know, not really a big investment either way, I don't think.
How enthusiastic was the crowd at overall the whole night? It to me, on television, it didn't come across as a dead crowd, but it also didn't come across as a red-hot crowd. I felt like some of the red-hot acts that either get, you know, cheers or boos or reactions or chants just didn't seem as pronounced as in some other cities. So it was a sellout crowd, not dead, but on TV it didn't seem like it was just crazed. Was that pretty accurate, or did you experience something different?
No, that's pretty accurate. I think, like, you know, Rusev Day, the things that are seem to be over everywhere were definitely over here. So Rusev Day, Randy Orton was really over, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura. You know, other than that, yeah, I guess the crowd was kind of subdued.
Jake, do you have another follow-up for him? Another question.
Yeah, I guess one thing that really stuck out to me was how quiet the crowd was during the women's match. Was it as dead to you in the building as it seemed on TV? Like, I could hear, you know, the ring making noises that you don't typically hear on television, like springs and creaking and things like that in the boards. It just seemed really dead to me.
No, man, it was every bit as dead as you thought it was. Like, you know, people pulled out their phones or, you know, went to go get popcorn, whatever, but there was no investment in that match at all.
Yeah, they have a long way to go to fix the women's brand on SmackDown. They've broken it pretty good.
Yeah, but I was, you know, Asuka, you know, mentioning that when Asuka came out, that was a pretty big pop, and also for Charlotte. But yeah, other than that, it was pretty subdued for the rest of the women's division.
Was there a dark match of any kind before the TV portion started?
Yeah, they did a rematch from last night, and the faces went over. You know, it seemed like it was pretty much kind of like the dark, I mean, not dark match, but kind of like the match that they did before the pay-per-view came on.
Oh, exactly.
It seemed like it was pretty much.
So it was Mojo. Yeah. Well, let's make clear, because people might not know. So you're saying it was Mojo, Shelton, and Gable against
yes.
Breezango, and now I'm forgetting.
Ty Dillinger.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. And they won when it looked like Ty Dillinger pulled out a new finishing move. Maybe he used it last night and I didn't see it, but it's a different finisher than they had been using.
Oh, interesting.
Pretty quick match. Yeah.
And who was most over tonight? Who was the most popular? Who got the biggest reactions?
I would say it's kind of a tie, I guess, between Asuka, AJ Styles. Randy Orton always gets the hugest reactions, man. But it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's the RKO that gets the big reaction or Randy Orton. But he definitely gets the star pop, man. For a B-plus player, he gets the star pop wherever he goes. So, yeah, though I think those were some of the people that were most over tonight. Oh, of course, Rusev Day. Rusev Day was really over.
What kind of reaction
even
did
during Miss Max Challenge?
How did Charlotte and Asuka do in terms of crowd response?
Pretty good. Everybody was invested in that, you know, was super excited. Definitely, you know, to see Asuka. This was my first time seeing Asuka and Shinsuke Nakamura. And whatever they have, if somebody can figure out how to bottle it, man, they would be rich. I mean, the charisma, the it factor, it's there. When you see them live, it was awesome. Awesome to see them.
Did you think the crowd reacted to Shinsuke like this is a WrestleMania main event star? Or did they react to him like, we like him, but not this is, you know, oh, I'm so glad I'm in his presence at a live event?
Yeah, I felt like that, but I didn't get the feeling everybody felt like that. So, you know, they reacted to him, but not the main event star reaction, I must say. I hate to say it, but yeah,
that's true. What I'm
wondering. It wasn't. Yeah. Yeah.
Did anything jump out? We have not. Oh, go ahead if you have more to say on that. But
no, that was it for that.
We have not seen 205 Live because we've been doing the show live here after SmackDown. But did anything in particular jump out to you from that? You don't have to give us a recap because we'll have a report up soon on our website. But anything jump out from the live show experience in terms of, well, for instance, how many people stuck around?
Well, you know what? A lot of people stuck around for Mismatch Challenge, which shocked me. Almost everybody stuck around for it. But as soon as that was over, building emptied out. In the building, I'm looking in here now, and it's a pretty empty building, man. It's sad because they worked so hard, like as far as the 205, like the match that I watched before I emailed you was a really good match. But, you know, it's kind of 205 Live. They're kind of playing to almost an empty arena. And it's sad because, you know, they're too good for that. I think they really need to do something else as far as rebranding it or have a show where people pay money to see them as opposed to pay for SmackDown and maybe or maybe not stay for 205 Live.
There were a couple entrances. Randy Orton and Naomi, I think, were the two that I'm remembering where they came out before a commercial break, then went to a commercial break, and then came back. What'd they do during the commercial break? It's always kind of fun to hear about that.
You know, it was strange. They just kind of stand around. Like, I would guess the strangest one was like when Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ were in the ring, and then they had Rusev come out. So, you know, when they go to a commercial break, AJ and Nakamura got out and shook hands. And, you know, you really couldn't tell what was going on. Like, you know, they could have had, you know, maybe Shane grab a microphone and say, I made the match. I don't know if that's what was said on TV, but they just did that. Then next thing you know, it was AJ and Rusev in the ring for a match. So, you know, they didn't really explain anything. Everybody was just kind of standing around. And same with Randy Orton, just kind of standing around and, you know, getting the Randy Orton pop like he does.
I want to clarify, too. Did they announce the new main event match before Mixed Match Challenge or before 205 Live? Or neither?
Before Mixed Match Challenge.
Got it. And did they acknowledge that there was a match advertised that would not be taking place, or did they just say, stick around for this Orton-Shinsuke-Corbin-Ziggler match?
Yep, that's exactly what they did. They did not announce what was, you know, supposed to be happening. They just announced what was going to happen.
Okay. Well, I mean, better than, I don't know what's better than. I just want them to be honest and forthright with their customers and not be so cavalier about advertising stuff and then not delivering. And they're as bad as any promoter that I can remember in the last 20 years when it comes to this. Now, they're as bad as Nitro when Nitro was struggling to draw fans again because they wouldn't deliver on what they promised. But that was more they just didn't even start the match sometimes. So,
well, you know, it's times that I've been here for the, you know, what they do afterwards, and sometimes they'll use the same wrestler that they advertise, but rather than it really being a match, it'll be like they come out and start fighting and somebody comes out and save them, and then, you know, they celebrate. Like, they advertise the match, but sometimes they don't even deliver the match, but they will have the same competitors doing like a little, you know, I guess like a little 2-minute schmoz, I guess you would call it.
Yes.
So, no, they're getting bad about it, man.
Yeah. Jake, is there anything else you want to ask Jack before we let him go?
No, I think we covered just about everything. That's it.
Well, I can give you, so from live perspective, I'll tell you the Bludgeon Brothers and the Uso skit. Well, so you guys probably didn't see, well, I don't know if you did see. So at one point they came out and the Uso and Vicky grabbed chairs, and then all the referees ran out and tried to hold them back, and they grabbed more chairs, and Jimmy picked up the microphone and said, well, we're going to kick your asses. I don't know if that was on TV or if that was during the commercial break.
Was it? Right. Yeah, all we saw was the hammers disarm the first set of chairs from Jimmy and Big E, and then they went to commercial. So
okay, yeah. So they did all that dark for the audience. And one live observation is, you know, I think using a hammer is not a great prop anyway, just because if you think about how heavy a hammer is and how heavy that one would have to be for the size of it. But he just, like, you know, before they leave, they just sling the hammer over their shoulder like it's like foam or something. To me, that takes me out of the moment.
Yeah. No, it's a good point.
Especially when you look at TNA and they're hitting people in the face with baseball bats on TNA, you know, albeit a mistake. You know, to see this big hammer and the way they wield it. I mean, Triple H's hammer, you know, looked like it may have been fake as well, but it was smaller. And, you know, he used it differently. This hammer is huge, and they swing it like it's 2 pounds. So that's
I've never been a fan of Triple H's sledgehammer either, because if it gets utilized as Hunter attempts to utilize it, it would crush a skull. And so he ends up always missing when he does that, but the jab, you know, with the hand over the butt of it, that always connects. And it's like, you know, just pick a weapon that you can actually use, you know, in a way that's not so predictable and that doesn't involve instant death if it's utilized the way that you're doing it. I think it's kind of a lame – it looks good, but it's a lame prop. And I guess the mallets are similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right,
so,
cool.
Yeah, I agree. But all in all, it was a really good show. As far as SmackDown's been kind of not good for like maybe the last month. And I feel like with this being WrestleMania season, this was kind of a comeback episode. So it was really enjoyable to watch in person. So that's all I got, guys.
Jack, I appreciate your support over the years, and maybe we'll talk to you again down the line.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.
Excellent. You bet. All right, we're back for the email portion of the program. Don't forget, I've got two more shows this week. You've got to subscribe or jump over to the blue logo, the blue brand, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, as opposed to this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. The next two shows are on Podcast One, and tomorrow's show, the Thursday flagship, I guess it's in 2 days as I'm recording this because it's not past midnight yet, but the Thursday flagship will feature PW Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we'll be talking a lot of WWE topics. It's a busy week with the pay-per-view week and WrestleMania taking shape. So tune in for that. If there is anything that I, a co-host, a caller, or an emailer has said this week that you want to elaborate on, disagree with, or question, send an email to wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you don't mind, to take a moment out in Apple Podcasts to give both of our shows, the Wade Keller Post Show and the Wade Keller Podcast, the blue and the red logos, 5-star ratings. That's always helpful for us and much appreciated. And also, if you're on Twitter, and most of you probably are, and you are listening to our show, take a picture of where you are right now, right this second, and tweet it with hashtag WKPWP, and you can share with other listeners what you are up to when you typically listen to this program. It's kind of cool to share photos from around the world, and whether it's on a subway ride, a hot air balloon ride in your backyard, poolside, whatever it is, send us a picture or post a picture on Twitter with hashtag WKPWP, and you can check out other people who have done that over the last 8 months on Twitter, hashtag WKPWP, if you want to communicate with other listeners of this program. All right, Jake, we've got some emails, lighter on emails than yesterday, certainly. But we have Jorge from Miami, who's competing with his brother, I believe, to get the most questions in. So we'll get even the score this week. He says, do you think that Asuka's streak is currently making her character two-dimensional and negatively affecting her development in the main roster? In NXT, Asuka was just a complete badass and had opponents scared of facing her. On the main roster, most women seem to not be as afraid of her. They want to face her to break the streak, putting more emphasis on her streak as opposed to her talent. When Asuka eventually loses, what will happen with her? What else do we know about the Princess of Tomorrow? Wait, the Empress of Tomorrow. Stephanie's a princess. It's going to be Tatanka all over again. Oh, God, I hope not. There's so many bad streaks, Jake, and most of them don't work out well. Didn't Baron Corbin have a streak once?
Did he? Man, I can't even remember that one.
I think he did. But nevertheless, yeah, there's bad streaks and there's a few good streaks. I think with Asuka, it's fine, but I think Ori makes a good point. You know, that she's like, people want to be the one to end her streak instead of being scared of her now that they've made that the centerpiece of her act. What do you think?
Well, I mean, given how they treat her on the microphone, I think she's glad she has the streak to give her a second dimension, to be honest with you. I mean,
that's actually well put. Good point.
It's very one-dimensional on the microphone. They don't really give her much personality. For the longest time, they were just telling her that she likes to have fun, or telling us that she likes to have fun. Like, what? You know, I never understood where they were going with that. And now they're at least to the place where they have title versus streak, and that's a major selling point for a WrestleMania match. And I think once they get past that, you know, they can – yeah, they can think about where to go into the future with Asuka, whether that's, you know, defending her streak as a champion, and then you kind of have this twofold pressure cooker environment for her to work in, or whether that means you have to come up with some way for her to credibly move forward after taking her first loss. I think both of those are more interesting than what she's doing now. At least, you know, with a loss, she'd have to overcome, you know, the adversity that comes along with, you know, letting go of a major streak. And if she's a title winner and she's still defending that streak, then, you know, the first person to beat her is going to get a major boost along the way as well.
Where are you now? Let's check in on this, on the Bobby Roode character. It jumped out to me in his promo again, where it was just, he's just, you know, because this is prompted by Asuka in the email saying, you know, is Asuka a one-dimensional character or two-dimensional, but not multidimensional? I guess two is multi, but people know what we mean. Roode is very one-dimensional. Everything comes down to him saying something about glory, being glorious. And it's just, I don't know, even people who like the song and like Roode, I think the body language says, okay, Bobby, we get it, but you're leaning too hard on that. Is there something else you can say or do? And there's just this satisfaction that he seems to have when he says it, like, this is the most witty, clever, cool thing that I'm about to do, and now I've done it, and now cheer me. And I want WWE to be better, and Bobby Roode's a good case study of giving more depth to the character. Mustafa Ali, you know, deservedly so, is getting praised for the, I think, a self-made promo that he put on social media last week, and that we got an article up, Artistry of Wrestling, by Zach Hadorn on pwtorch.com, writing about that. I want to see more depth from Bobby Roode, too. We know nothing about Asuka. We know almost nothing about Shinsuke other than he's a decorated Japanese superstar, and he's quirky and a rock star. And what do we know about Bobby Roode other than he wrestled many years before getting to WWE? I mean, I think that is, like, the entirety of what a typical SmackDown viewer knows about Bobby Roode.
Yeah, I think he's really miscast as a babyface. I think he was a better heel, and I think he had a better presence as a heel. He's just kind of this goofy guy that, you know, does his glorious pose and has the entrance. You know, there's not a whole lot more to him than that. And I don't know if they want to try to add more to it, because I think it would make the babyface aspects of his character seem even more ridiculous. You know, he's a flamboyant, you know, braggart who talks about how glorious he is. It's not a babyface character, you know? And so I think they've kind of kept it the way they have to avoid, you know, having that discussion where you have to either turn him heel or come up with a different character, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense in the way that he's currently portrayed. And I think his promo performances have, you know, they haven't been great. And I think it's pretty clear, you know, who the personality was in Beer Money, having watched him do quite a few promos in WWE now.
Yeah. And it's not like they want to have a heel walking around with fans shouting a word or two of positive feedback towards that heel. Or at least not another one. But you're right. I mean, to say, well, he's miscast as a babyface is true. But if you're going to cast him as a babyface, how about you put 3 minutes of thought into it at a creative meeting and come up with something else that we can know about him? You know, like, I don't think it's asking much to go, well, he's better off as a heel than a face, so let's just have him be one simple thing, a guy who spews glorious.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I wish they would do more with him. It's just kind of a low effort character for them at this point, because the catchphrase is over, the entrance is over. You know, he puts on, you know quality matches, if not the most exciting matches, generally speaking, whenever he's asked to. And I think it's just one of those things where he's in the mid card and they just don't put that much effort into it. And you can see that with the way they've treated Mahal as well.
Randy Orton sort of seems sometimes like the grown up in the room. Tonight I thought that was a case, and You know, you've got everybody just acting kind of crazy, and he's just the grown-up who will just strike with the RKO out of nowhere. I like the line that this is actually a list I care about in reference to the Grand Slam Championship, a little dig at the stupid top 10 list, which, by the way, Jake, are they ever going to update that? Like, is this an annual vote now? I thought they were going to update it every week or at the first show of every month. Are we going to still be talking about the same list with no changes, like, in July?
Are we going to talk about the list anymore at all? I think it may be something that just quietly disappears. They tried to make it work with that one angle, you know, with Rude and Orton. But
I think that would break Daniel Bryan's heart if it went away, because he's always, always wanted this.
Is that something that he, you know, I think he imagined it working a little bit differently than it did. And maybe he was hoping for an actual, like, oh, let's do like ranked, matches and things like they do in MMA. And this is just like a popularity contest.
And I don't even like, I'm more of a defender of the popularity ranking than most, in the sense that it gets you off the hook for actually having to track wins and losses and house shows. And now you got to start, you know, if heels are, you know, if there's heel champions, they're going to constantly, you know, lose by DQ if they're main eventing house shows. You know, like Friday night at Target Center, it was Cesaro and Sheamus against Reigns and Seth. Well, Cesaro and Sheamus are not going to pin Reigns or Seth. And you know that if you're, you know, watch WWE and know how they work. But they're also not going to lose the tag team titles. So it was a DQ. You know, a chair, Cesaro brings a chair in the ring, boom, DQ, now you're out of the match. Well, now the champs lost. They do that kind of thing a lot, where the finish, if they count it as a loss, would mean the wrestler should move down in the rankings. But they don't want, they book for reasons other than rankings. You know, they book finishes based on the ebb and flow of a house show, protecting baby faces. And so if you actually did rankings based on wins and losses, it would mess up a lot of other stuff. And so I thought, well, this is kind of sneaky, but yeah, have the wrestlers vote for each other and have it be a popularity contest, and you don't take it as seriously. And I think even Shane or Daniel Bryan said, hey, we're looking at these rankings as just input, as a suggestive. Maybe if we get the sense somebody in the locker room is really respected, then maybe we'll take a second look at them if we haven't been giving them opportunities. Something like that. You know, just I think that's fine. And then it does kind of turn into, you know, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens lobbying for votes, or Ty Dillinger doing something and the announcer's going, did he just make a save for this, Benjamin and Gable, just to try to get their votes? Like, you can kind of turn it into a little kind of mid-card ongoing thing. And I'm fine with that. What baffles me is they did it and then they stopped it. It was like they created this whole concept just for Jinder, Orton, and Rude. And has there been another, was there another feud that was sort of based around it?
I mean, no, they had a few backstage skits where people acknowledged their place in the list, but that was really about it. You know, it's not, I guess if you were going to try to do it in a way where you were taking it seriously and they were actually ranked matches and whatnot, you know, I guess you could avoid some of the, you know, some of the issue of having every match count by just, you know, having officially ranked matches and having exhibitions and whatnot. You know, and it might even give you a decent house show gimmick if somebody challenges somebody to a ranked match at a house show or something. You know, those kinds of things you could work around. But in this way, you know, in the way it's been presented, I think you're right that they could have found a way to do it in an interesting manner. But it seemed like not everybody was behind it to begin with, and then once it didn't work, it was very easy to just push away.
And that's what happens with top 10 lists in wrestling. I mean, they just don't last because they sound like good ideas until you actually have to do them, and then the shine is off it after a week or two. David Hennessy from Morganton, North Carolina says, why does it seem like AJ the champion has to wrestle every single week and wrestle multiple people sometimes, but Shinsuke just gets to be a spectator? That is sort of what they do, because they do it because it's not because it's fair and makes sense, but because AJ is a really good wrestler and they want him to help draw ratings and fill TV time.
Yeah, I think it's purely TV driven. Yeah, people like to see champions and they like to see quality wrestling on television, and AJ Styles fits the bill on all of those things. He's just an incredibly popular act, and I think they'd probably get groans and boos if he was not on television or if he was wrestling only occasionally like Shinsuke does.
Brian from Richmond, Virginia says, I got legitimately annoyed by Carmella tonight, and I wanted to see her get her ass kicked. In other words, she did a great job as a heel. The screaming and the antics caused me to feel this way on one level, but maybe on a deeper level, I really don't want her to cash in during the Asuka Charlotte match and take her attention away from those two. We talked about that earlier. You know, the idea that that's an escape hatch from having to do a clean finish, so Asuka's streak stays alive, but the title changes hands because of a cash in. And I don't think they have super set rules on how a cash in works, so I could see that, but. I mean, that is an escape hatch for getting out of a match that might be kind of difficult. And I do think Carmella is a good character and a good in the way that the WWE presents the women's rosters. I think she's been a good obnoxious briefcase holder and is a pretty good heel character. I don't think she's somebody you want to be the champion for a long stretch of time defending the title. I don't think she's at that level. But as an agitating heel who's knocking on the door, I think she works fine as a part of SmackDown on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I think she's improved dramatically. They may have pulled the trigger a bit too early, putting the briefcase on her when they did, but I think they may have felt like they had something going with her and Ellsworth when it happened, and they might have had some plans that ended up getting changed, as a result of what went down with Ric Flair and how they quickly sort of pivoted to putting the title on Charlotte. After that, as kind of a, she quickly made that a tribute to her father and whatnot. So it was, plans change, but I think Carmella's maturing as an act, and she's got a ways to go in the ring. But I think personality-wise, she's actually moved along quite well in the year she's been on SmackDown.
Bryant also said, random question, do you know what happened to the Jim Ross podcast? He said on Twitter that his contract with Podcast One ran out, and he's going to announce a new home soon. And that was a handful of days ago, so I'm not sure if he announced anything yet. But he does say he intends to start his podcast again. He says, thank you to the great Red Brand Feed follow-up shows. I always tune in every week. Well, thank you, Bryant. I appreciate it. This is a kind of sneaky question, only tangentially related to SmackDown, but Aaron from Newark says, and we'll wrap up on this note, seeing the image of Kid Rock sitting on a stool or a chair with a guitar made me think, if they don't have a match lined up for Elias at WrestleMania, could you see a segment with those two in the ring doing some sort of back and forth and ending with Rock hitting Elias with a guitar? So this is sneaky in the sense that Elias is not a Raw wrestler or not a SmackDown wrestler, and that Kid Rock, it was just a Kid Rock video, but we'll address it anyway. What do you think, Jake?
I don't know. I'm almost kind of half expecting him to end up being Braun's tag partner in some kind of odd couple type relationship.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that's a distinct possibility, too.
But I don't have a great feel for what Elias is doing. And if they don't want to put him in a match, per se, and they don't want to put him in the dray or whatever, having him do some kind of musical performance with a celebrity would probably be a big boost for his character. That wouldn't be a bad idea either.
All right, cool. Well, and on that note, Jake, appreciate you talking through SmackDown with me. I'm still not convinced I'm going to like the Sami KO storyline, but I think there's some... I sort of trust Kevin Owens to be part of something that makes sense if he has any say-so in it. I think he's logical, and I hope that they can tie this all together and have it make sense, whatever the match ends up being at WrestleMania. I am relieved... All in all, even though I think Shane and Brian have been overexposed and the storyline has sucked the oxygen off the brand this year and all that, I don't want them to do all that and then not have a WrestleMania match that matters. And the reaction when they announced Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn was just like shrug, just collective shrug in the building. And then I think it was Byron Saxton who said, that's huge. And it's like, oh God, no, it's not Byron. And then I wasn't sure if he meant that or Shane quitting. Or taking a leave of absence. But if he met KO and Sammy, it's like sometimes you just got to know when not to try to lie to the audience and exaggerate something. But I hope they can make this into something that makes sense when we look back at it and go, okay, now I see how this all played out. And it does make sense in retrospect.
Yeah, I think you're more optimistic than me that they're going to have some magic thread that ties all this together.
Just hopeful, yeah.
I think they just had a lot of ideas in their heads, and they have to make it kind of coalesce into the one that they have at their disposal now. And so we'll probably get an explanation the next week as to why that they decided to, to put the band back together to send Shane away. But other than that, I'm not sure what to expect for the next couple of weeks. I assume Brian is going to be the one to announce, you know, Shane is going to come back and, yeah. and insert himself into the match. But we'll have to see how it plays out. I think you could be right that Brian may be the special guest referee, but we'll see. I just don't have a lot of confidence in SmackDown's creative at this point. It's just let me down too many times.
Yeah. I can see Brian being special referee, and the big storyline is, will Brian side with Kevin Owens and Sammy, or will he side with Shane, or will he be objective and not biased? And in the match, that'll be the storyline they play up. And that's what all these hints have been, that Brian is secretly sympathetic to KO and Sammy because he shares their background with them from it as being an indie guy. And then in the end, Brian will turn out to be a good guy, a stand-up guy who keeps Sammy and Shane from cheating and helps Shane get the rightful victory he deserves over Sammy. So mark that down. That's my official prediction on how this plays out through the end of WrestleMania.
Sounds good. I can't argue with it at this point. We'll have to see what plays out on TV.
Yep. So everybody check out Jake's reports on SmackDown every Tuesday night at ProWrestling.net. You can compare what he's saying to what I'm saying at PWTorch.com with our simultaneous reports. Just open up a couple tabs on your phone or laptop and check out our reports for two different perspectives. And check out Jake's other work at PWAudio.net. Is that where Jason says to go? PWAudio.net? I should check that.
Yeah, that's where it ends up.
Yep, cool. So you can hear more Jake throughout the week there. And Jake, appreciate it. We'll talk to you hopefully sometime soon.
Always a pleasure.
Excellent. All right, if you are not a VIP member and you want to get ad-free, plug-free versions of my four shows per week, the Wade Keller Post Show and the Wade Keller Podcast, and ad-free, plug-free versions of the PW Torch Livecast, seven new shows per week in that lineup, along with, most of all, our VIP-exclusive showcase centerpiece flagship shows like the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show three times per week, current events, and a weekly mailbag, The Fix with Todd Martin. And so much more. So many other shows. So every single day, Wade Keller Hotline. The post-pay-per-view roundtables. Retro radio shows. We've got Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise. He spent years at The Observer. He's now with Torch VIP. Alan Cunahan covering the Europe scene and the Japan scene and the U.S. indie scene with an enthusiasm and a knowledge that is unmatched and contagious. So much great stuff. It's all compatible with your iPhone, with your Android device. You can subscribe to PW Torch VIP podcasts with your subscription password, and you can do so on popular podcast apps on both devices or stream them directly and easily from our ad-free mobile site. So many ways to get more podcasting and our top-shelf podcasting. There's certain things we focus on here on the Wade Keller Post Show and Wade Keller Podcast, but there's so much else that goes on in professional wrestling, WWE and otherwise, and we have it covered. It's not just one voice. It's not just one opinion. It's a real wide array, but it's just an unmatched array of experienced and entertaining conversations and an independent voice. You know, it's an uncompromised group of people. We're not worried about our next job with WWE, but we're also not worried about just being fanboys who are just trying to be positive all the time when there's times to be critical, you know, like Fabulous Moolah and completely making up her history. The Bruce Mitchell Audio Show earlier today included a conversation Bruce and I had about the shamefulness of putting women on the roster who probably look at Moolah's legit history and felt uncomfortable endorsing her and feel uncomfortable being put in that position. I mean, it's the way that they make up history is there needs to be somebody to check that and kind of set the record straight. And we take pride in providing that perspective that says, hey, wait a second, let's put the brakes on the rewriting of history and the way that WWE wants people to see things. And here's the truth. This is documented, factual background that is completely contradictory to the propaganda that WWE is putting out there in a self-serving way. And sometimes it makes sense to put out propaganda and be self-serving when you're a business. But fortunately, there's other independent voices out there who are letting people who are fans and want to know the truth, what the truth is. And that's kind of what we do with our shows. Plus, we just have fun talking about the business, but with a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge and a desire to just figure out why things work and why things don't in this crazy industry and understand the personalities and the dynamics. So we have a lot of fun covering this business. I've been doing it since I was in high school. I started Pro Wrestling Torch over 30 years ago when I was in high school back in 1987. And I was the new kid on the block trying to take wrestling journalism to places that it hadn't been before, including on-record interviews on an ongoing basis, the Torch Talk series, before there were shoot tapes, before there were podcasts, before there were even wrestling radio shows doing live interviews. The Torch Talk series broke ground and got major names in the wrestling industry to go on record talking openly about the industry in an honest journalistic fashion, and it hadn't been done before. And those are all available, or most of them are available when you go VIP. So if you're not a VIP member and this sounds interesting and intriguing, don't just limit yourself to the free shows that we do. Get them ad-free, plug-free, and all the other content. Plus, get lost in our archives, newsletters, over 1,500 back issues, and just thousands of podcasts, many of them sorted by topic and theme and host that you can stream from our ad-free website. Go to pwtorch.com/govip if you're interested in more information or signing up. Rates are as low as $8.75 per month. On average. So go check out our rates and all the details, everything that comes with membership at pwtorch.com/govip. If you're interested in volunteering to be an on-site correspondent for a future post show following Raw or SmackDown, the email address for that is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I mentioned the live casts. I hope you'll check them out. Pat McNeil earlier today put up his latest episode of Making the List. It's a show that airs live every Tuesday late afternoon, where Pat and a rotation of co-hosts come up with the top seven list. And this week's show, and I'm looking forward to listening to this, I haven't had a chance to yet, Pat McNeil is joined by Jim Valley and former ECW champion Justin Credible, and they talk about the top, or they list their top seven pro wrestling movies. So Making Lists, it's a great new addition to the live cast lineup. We also have a show dedicated to NXT, to Impact Wrestling. Rich Fan does the deep dive every Saturday where he goes in-depth on a single topic with a rotation of co-hosts. There's Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks, our post-pay-per-view show that Greg does on Sundays after pay-per-views. Or Wrestling Night talks about the biggest upcoming events in professional wrestling and also covers other big events like ROH's pay-per-views and other big New Japan shows. So that's on Sundays. We also have an MMA dedicated program and our best of show on Friday. So great stuff, great content, and definitely worth checking out if you haven't yet. That's the PW Torch livecast, which is available by searching PW Torch in your podcast app, or you can find the shows to stream them at pwtorchlivecast.com. Again, those are seven free shows a week in addition to the four that I do per week on this feed and the Podcast One feed. But you can get everything. You don't have to figure out where to go and deal with ads and plugs. You can get everything that we do with that VIP membership with the ads and plugs removed from the shows that are otherwise free. So check it out, pwtorch.com/govip to go VIP, or just go to pwtorchlivecast.com or search pwtorch to sample or subscribe to the livecast lineup. Be sure you're checking out pwtorch.com every day for the latest news, results, flashbacks, live TV coverage, live pay-per-view coverage, special columns, and so much more. That's pwtorch.com. And for the latest written recaps of pro wrestling personality-hosted podcasts, check out pwpodcasts.com. That's our sister site, pwpodcasts.com. And finally, please support us when you shop Amazon. It's super simple and it's so helpful. We appreciate everybody who is doing this already. When you're about to shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. There's a big Amazon logo on that page. Click it. It takes you right to the Amazon website. But everything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. You pay the same price, same great merchandise, same great prices. Everything's the same, but they know you started with us. That means we sent you there, and that means they reward us with a commission. So, and it's a percentage of what you buy. So shop away and include us when you when you're shopping Amazon. Just start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. And finally, if you want a break from screen time and you want to check out our Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, it's how it all started. We're still publishing a paper copy every week. We've done so since late 1987 when I started the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter using my grandma's old typewriter with sticky keys and taking it to the local printing press and sending it out and building a business from scratch. And you can still get our weekly issues with exclusive content, and including columns, news, results, pay-per-view roundtables, and much more. You can subscribe, and you can get details on that on the weekly newsletter and how to subscribe by going to pwtorch.com/paper copy. That's pwtorch.com/ paper copy. And that'll give you the rates, the subscription information, and just some more details on what comes in a newsletter. And you can even get a look at what a newsletter looks like. All right, that'll do it for me for today. Thanks, everybody. Jake, our on-site correspondent, Jack, our callers, and our emailers. Until later in the week, with Greg Parks on the Thursday flagship, this is Wade Keller signing off.